Welcome to the Shir and Targum in Parshas Lech Lecha. The Shir this evening is sponsored by Moshe and Bela Rosenbaum, marking the yardside today of his father, Aryeh B'Reb Nosson, Shomer Shel Aben Ali, interesting Moshe Nachas Ruach, the Tar Mitzvah Samay Simtov, and the families involved in. I want to mention as well Sylvia Wilkenfeld, who sponsored in memory of Pesel Wilkenfeld just a few days ago. As well, the Neshama should have Aliyah, should see Moshe Nachas Ruach, the Tomas and Maisim Tovim, that the family is involved in. I want to speak today, or tonight, about a few translations of the Targum Onkelos that relate specifically to tefillah, to prayer, which we'll see that the Targum Onkelos inserts into the psukim, even in places where it's not immediately obvious that that's what the Pasuk is talking about. To start off with, we'll take a look in Perek Yudalad Pasuk Chof Aleph, where Avram Avinu has just been victorious in the war against the four kings. And Pasuk Chof Aleph, Vayomer Melech Stom El Avram, the king of Stom comes and he says to Avram, Tan li anefesh, all I'm asking for you is just give me back my people. In other words, there were people who were taken captive, you know, by the enemy in the war. Just return the people to me. Please don't take them as slaves. But harachush kachloch, whatever spoils you took in war, so, you know, even the spoils that had belonged to the people of Stone beforehand, I hereby give them to you. You know, you did a good job. You helped out over here, so you're entitled to the spoils. Vayom pasuk chavez, vayomer Avram amelach Stone. Avram says to the king of Stone, harimosi yodi el Hashem kel elyon, I lift up my hand to Hashem, the Most High God, Kone Shomayim Va'aretz, Creator of Heaven and Earth, Pasuk Chagimol, Imichut V'Atzrochnau V'im Ekach Mikol Asher Bach. I'm not going to take from you, not a string, not even a shoelace, Im Ekach Mikol Asher Bach. I'm not even going to take anything that you're offering me. As you can keep the people, you can keep the money. Below Somar, lest you say, Ani Hasharti Es Avram, it is I, the king of Stom, who caused Avram to become rich. What's the meaning of the phrase Harimosi Yodi El Hashem? I've lifted up my hand to Hashem. So Rashi writes Loshen Shvuah. Right? It's a turn of phrase that refers to an oath. You know, a person lifts up his hand to take an oath. And according to Rashi, the way the pasuk translates is Avram says to the king of Stone, I swear to God that I'm not going to take anything from you, not a string, not a shoelace. I swear that I'm not even going to take anything at all. We should point out the author of the Aksava Kabbalah, many, many centuries later, writes that he finds this interpretation of Rashi difficult to understand. We know that Jews are very reluctant to swear. Right? We do anything we can to avoid swearing. So Avram Avinu was not going to take from the spoils that are offered to him by the Melech Stom. Okay, we understand that. That's a reasonable position, whatever his position is. Why go to the lengths of swearing over something like that? No one's asking him to swear, you know. Let him just say, I don't want to take, thank you so much, I'm not going to take any of the spoils. It seems excessive, says the author of the Aksava Kabbalah, for Avram Avinu to swear that he's not going to take any of the spoils. Perhaps that's what's prompting the translation of the Targum Onkelos, which is different than that of Rashi. Targum Onkelos in Pasuk Chof Beis writes, Vayomer Avram Lamalka de Stom, Avram says to the king of Stom, Aremus Yedai Bitzlo, I lift up my hands in prayer, Kodom Hashem Kel Ilo'a, before God, the God who is most high, the Kinyone Shmai Va'ora, who created heaven and earth. In other words, the lifting up of hands, says the Targum Onkelos here, is not a reference to taking an oath. It's a reference to davening. Avram Avinu says, I daven to Hashem. And indeed, right, you know, efros kapai el Hashem, right? So we find, certainly the idea of priestess kapayim, of lifting up one's hands in prayer, is an idea which we find numerous times in Tanakh. you know, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Kitzesiyas Oir Efros Kapayel Hashem." We had in the Haftarah over Sukkot, Shlomo HaMelech dedicates the Beis HaMikdash. He's lifting up his hands in prayer before the Ribono Shel Olam. And indeed, the Oz V'Hodar Mikros Gedolos over here in his commentary on the Unkelus quotes from the Zohar. The Zohar writes, "Osir Leila Barnash La Aroma Yodoy La Eila." A man is not allowed to lift up his hands above. Bar bitzlo uvevirchon uvetachnunim lemorei. A person is not allowed to lift up his hands unless he's davening or engaging in bracha or supplications before the Ribono Shel Olam. In other words, the very idea of priestess yodayim, of lifting up the hands, goes hand in hand, you'll pardon the pun, with the idea of davening. So that's what Unkula says over here. I've lifted up my hands in prayer before the Ribono Shel Olam. Oh. Right. Right. So what's the tefillah? Right? Before we try to answer that question, I just want to point out that when we're talking, you know, Sashir in Targum Mim, Lashon Rabbim. Right. So if you look at the Yonasan Ben Uziel, right? So the Yonasan Ben Uziel writes, like Rashi, if Omer Avram, Lamalka the Stom, Aremis Yedi Bishvua, Kodam Hashem. He makes it very, very clear. Yonasan ben Uziel says, I've lifted up my hands with an oath before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, explicitly like Rashi. So, again, even within the world of Targumim, the Targum of Unkelus is noteworthy, right? And we see, oh, by the way, that even leaving aside the differences between Unkelus and Yonasan ben Uziel, that Unkelus tends to be much more literal. And the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel brings in many, many midrashim. Even besides that, even when it comes to translation, very often we find differences between the two Targumim. Here's a case in point. Yeah. Right, exactly. Right, exactly. It seems to be a totally unnecessary thing to swear, which again, the Ksav HaKabbalah comments, that's why he doesn't understand why Rashi feels compelled to explain it that way. But the flip side of the question, if you explain it like the Targum Unkelus, is just, how do you read the Psukim? I lift up my hands in prayer before Hashem. I'm not going to take, you know, even a shoelace or a string from you, Melech Stone. Those are two very separate ideas. What's he davening about? And what's the flow of the psukim if one is to understand it in that way? The Ram, I'm sorry. Yeah. Right. Right. So Chaim Meir over here wants to basically reference the Gemara Nedarim. You know, the Gemara Nedarim says that a person can take an oath in order to buttress his commitment to a Dvar Mitzvah. You know, to the extent to which Avraham Avinu views this as a Dvar Mitzvah, that he's not going to take any of the spoils from the Melech Stone. So again, it's a big Nisayon. You know, I assume it was more than $1.50, whatever the Melech Stone was offering it. It's a big Nisayon, and the truth is, let's be honest over here, Avraham Avinu did deserve it. I mean, he fought the whole war, right? You know, so it's really an act of going above and beyond for him to say, I don't want to take it. It's something that he might be tempted, so he wants to underscore his commitment with a shvuah. Okay, so that, again, I hear, you know, I definitely hear that. Go, yeah. Right, okay, so it was miraculous, right, 100%. In any case, let's go back to the Unkelus for a moment. Aremis yodi bitzlo kodem Hashem. I lift up my hand with prayer before Hashem. What does that mean? What does that mean in the context of the Psukim? The Ramban quotes both Rashi and the Targum Unkelus. And by the way, I should note the Ramban says Pshat in Rashi along the lines that Chaim Meir suggests. The Chaim Motzasi b'Sifri, after quoting Rashi, the Ramban writes, The Sifri in Parshas Voschanon says, Motsinu b'chol ha-tzadikim, shemashbien es yitzron shelo la'asos. Right? We find that tzadikim take shvuos to prevent them to keep their yetzahara in check. And, you know, that's a laudable thing to do. Again, that seems to be the idea that's being expressed over here. The Ramban quotes Unculus, and essentially the Ramban says the difference between Unculus and Rashi is really negligible. What do we mean? Rashi is saying that Avraham Avinu is swearing, I'm not going to take anything. And Unculus is saying Avraham is davening, may I be punished if I take something. So in other words, according to the Ramban, the way he writes it, is im ekach mikol asher lach klomar ko yase li elokim v'chol yosef, may I be punished, says Avraham Avinu, if I do take some of the spoils. So the prayer ala Unculus and the shvua ala Rashi are more or less the same thing, you know, the way the Ramban presents it. I had this chus, I was talking about this particular tagum Unculus with my son-in-law earlier this week. So he, right off the bat, suggested a pshat and Unculus, which I thought about afterwards. I started looking around to see if anybody said it. I didn't see anybody say it, so I'm saying it for posterity. Okay, so we'll say it over. And I think it works very, very well. So he pointed to the fact that in Chof Gimel, the verbs which are used, they're all in the future tense. Both in the future tense, I should say. Im yichud v'yatzroch now, v'im ekach, mikol asher loch, I will take, let me not take, v'lo somar, let you not say. Basically, he suggested the following pshat. Avraham Avinu turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam, at the same time that he's talking to Melech Sdom, and he says, I daven that I never be in a position where I have to take from you. I daven that this is probably going to be a recurring occurrence. In other words, right now you're offering me the spoils. I'm turning it down now, and I'm davening that I will never be tempted to take this from you. And I daven that you will never say, "V'lo somani asharti es Avram." In other words, it's not that he's reinforcing his decision, but he's looking with an eye towards the future. That's the tefillah of Avraham Avinu. In a sense, you know, he's maybe not even so confident in himself. It is a big nisayon, it's a big temptation. I need to daven that I won't fall prey to this temptation at some point in the future. Chazal say the Gemara in Sukkah that Yomolei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozro Ein Yocholo. You know, when it comes to the Yetzer Hara, it's really HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help entirely that helps us overcome the Yetzer Hara. You know, no matter how big tzaddikim we are, the Yetzer Hara is fundamentally stronger than us. It's only with the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're able to overcome it. So even Avraham Avinu is faced with a tremendous nisayon. His response is not so much a shvua, his response is to daven that I never need to be in a situation. In other words, right now, Baruch Hashem, he has a lot of wealth. But let's say, you know, the market goes sour, and a year later the Melech Sdom comes back to him and says, you know, the offer is still on the table. So Avraham Avinu has to daven that, you know, it's not good. It shouldn't come to, I don't ever want to be in a situation where you say, you know, ani hasharti es Avraham. I didn't see anyone who says it exactly like that, but I think it works very, very nicely in the explanation. Oh, excellent. Okay, so that's... You obviously are a plant in the audience, because that's the next point. All right, I'll velo somar ani hasharti. So many ask the question when it comes to Melech Sdom. So Avraham Avinu, so to speak, gets up on his high horse, says, "I'm not going to take a penny from you." But in Mitzrayim, when Paro gives him all of this stuff. What's that? Right. But in other words, when Paro gives him all of these riches, Avraham Avinu seemingly doesn't bat an eyelash. He just takes, right? So, right, you know, l'an yitav li bavurech, right? So Rashi says, she yitav li matanos, but there's a tremendous amount of literature. You know, that's a very crass thing to say. You know, Sarah, you know, maybe you could pretend to be my brother so that I come out rich from the whole thing. Very, very difficult to understand on the surface. But that question, so how come he's so anti getting the matanos from the Melech Stone and so comfortable getting the matanos, getting the gifts from Paro? So perhaps one can suggest the following, again, along the lines of this, you know, my son-in-law's translation of the Targum, or his application of the Targum to the Psukim. According to this understanding of the Targum, Avraham Avinu was worried about something which is going to recur. Paro was a one-time event, and Paro was in a different country, Mitzrayim, and Avraham Avinu had no expectation he'd go back to Mitzrayim. In a sense, what happens in Mitzrayim stays in Mitzrayim, right? In other words, on a moral level, Avraham Avinu was entitled to take from Paro, he was entitled to take from Melech Sdom. There was no moral deficiency in taking from these two people. His whole feeling was, V'lo somar ani ha'asharti. In other words, nobody should walk around saying, Avraham Avinu is subject to me, is subjugated to me, I made him who he is today. You know, no non-Jewish king, you know, should walk around saying, Avraham Avinu is beholden to me. That would undermine the whole mission of Avraham Avinu. So if Paro wants to go around saying that in Mitzrayim, let him say it. You know, it's not like there's going to be ongoing contact between the king of Mitzrayim and Avraham Avinu in Eretz Yisrael. It was a cold peace, you know, that they had between the two countries. But Melech Sdom is Avraham Avinu's neighbor. You know, he lives in Eretz Yisrael. There's probably going to be ongoing contact. And Avraham Avinu even foresees that there's going to be ongoing contact. Aremis yodi bitzlo korem Hashem. I lift up my hands in prayer. Im ekach mikol asher loch. I don't ever want to take anything from you. Because since we're neighbors, the possibility of Melech Sdom saying, Ani ha'asharti es Avram, I made Avram Avinu rich, I made him the man he is today, and thus undermining the whole mission of Avram Avinu, where he's just, yeah, Avram Avinu, we bought him, you know, we bought him, we made him the man he is today, and that's really what underlies his whole mission and his whole message that he's sharing. So that was a much greater danger with the Melech Sdom than it was with Paro Melech Mitzrayim. So he was comfortable taking from Paro Melech Mitzrayim, but from the Melech Sdom, since they had such a close geographical relationship, and the likelihood was that, you know, the same people who would deal with Melech Sdom in the future would also deal with Avraham Avinu, he didn't want there to be a situation where he would be beholden in that way. Of course, Avraham Avinu at this time presumably doesn't know what we know, because we follow the Chumash, that all we need to do is wait one more parsha, and the Melech Sdom and his whole area is going to be out of the picture permanently. You know, there isn't going to be a future in which Melech Sdom is going to potentially say, Ani ha'asharti es Avram, because that whole area is going to be wiped off the map. But as of now, Avraham Avinu doesn't realize that. And again, there will be some time in between this war and, you know, the destruction of the five towns of stone. So, you know, for that interim period, Avraham Avinu was saying, I don't want there, you know, since this is going to be a recurring relationship, I don't want that possibility of saying, Ani ha'asharti es Avram. Yeah. Right. In other words, he was thinking they would stay there, right? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. But I don't know if Avraham Avinu's Shvua could really be linked. Right, but he doesn't swear, let them be wiped off the map. In other words, he swears. Right, okay, all right. Yeah, okay. I hear that. Yeah.
Miracle that was really, really, you know, she'll look at their
Right. So there are other differences also that you could say 100% between the Melech Sdom and Paro. That's one instance in the parasha where Unculus inserts tefillah in a way where it's not obvious that the pasuk is talking about tefillah. Again, you know, in Rashi's understanding, the pasuk is talking about a shvua. Another such instance occurs later on, when Hagar is driven out for the first time from the house of Avraham Avinu. So she's driven out. The Malach catches up to her at the well. And in Parak Pesayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer Lo Malach Hashem, the angel of God says to Hagar, Hinach Hara Violadet Bein, behold, you are now pregnant. You will give birth to a son. V'koros shmo Yishmael. You'll call his name Yishmael. Ki shama Hashem el onyech. So shama Hashem el onyech, on the surface, is translated, Hashem has heard your suffering. Right? The word onyech, the suffering from the word oni, that she has undergone. Indeed, the word oni appears earlier in the parsha, in that story, back in Pasuk Vav, we're told Vate'aneha Sarai Vativrach Miponeha. What causes Hagar to run away is the fact that she is afflicted by Sarah, right? So Hashem has heard your affliction, and that's the way. Again, looking at the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, that is the way that Yonasan ben Uziel translates the phrase Arum Gli Kadam Hashem. It is revealed before Hashem. Sigufich, the sigufim, the sufferings, the tortures that you are undergoing, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has responded to. Now the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel has to change one word in the pasuk in terms of his translation, right? The pasuk says God has heard your suffering. Suffering, generally speaking, is not something that is heard, right? You can say God saw your suffering. So the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel interprets the word shama non-literally. It's not that God heard your suffering. It has been revealed before Hashem, the fact that you have suffered. In other words, God is aware of your suffering. That's what he writes. Gili kodam Hashem sigufich. You know, your suffering, your afflictions is revealed before Hashem. The Targum Onkelos also translates seemingly non-literally, but goes in the opposite direction. He says, you should call his name Yishmael, says Unculus, Arei Kabel Hashem Tzlosich, because God has received your prayers. Now, that's a very interesting translation. Shama Hashem El Onyech, God has heard your affliction. How do we get from there to Kabel Hashem Tzlosich? God has accepted your prayers. So, on the one hand, you know, the Targum Unculus maintains a more literal understanding of Shama, he's heard. God has heard, right? Shma Koleinu, God has heard your prayers. But how did he get from Onyech to Tzlosech, right? You know, your affliction, how did he get from there to your prayers? So there are two ways to understand where the Targum Onkelos is coming from. Either you can say God has heard your suffering. Well, God doesn't hear suffering, right? I mean, no one can hear suffering. Suffering isn't something which is subject to being heard. So clearly, says the Targum Onkelos, what the pasuk means is God has heard you when you cried out to him during your suffering. So it's implicit in the pasuk that Hagar davened to the Ribono Shel Olam. Other Mefarshim on the Targum suggest that maybe the Targum is translating a little bit differently. The word ani can mean suffering, but aniya in Hebrew can mean calling out in a loud voice. Yachad kulam hodu v'imlichu v'amru, you know, anu v'amru, right? In other words, v'anisa v'yomarta, to call out in a loud voice is la'anos, right? Ironically, la'anos can mean to torture, la'anos can mean to call out in a loud voice. Sometimes when people call out in a loud voice, they torture everyone who's around them. Maybe that's the connection, right? So, but the lashon of aniya can be understood as calling out. So some of the mafarshim write, kishama Hashem el onyech, that God has heard your calling. The word onyech doesn't mean suffering. It literally means your prayer and your calling out. Right? So here too, Hagar is depicted by the Targum as one who davens. She davens to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has heard her tefillos. It's interesting, and you know, we'll end with this, and then we'll perhaps talk about this a little bit more tomorrow. The Targum Onkelos downplays the degree to which Hagar suffered at the hands of Sarah. Right? We know there's a very famous Ramban, on this whole parasha, where the Ramban on Pasuk Vav writes, "Vateanel Sarah vativrach miponeha," because of the affliction that Sarah imposed upon Hagar, she ran away. The Ramban famously writes, "Chata Sarah imenu beino yizeh." Right, Sarah was guilty. She sinned by torturing Hagar the way she did. V'gam Avram banicho osa lasos kein. And Avram Avinu as well was guilty for having allowed Sarah to do this. V'shama Hashem el Anya. HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard her suffering. Her suffering came before the Ribbono Shel Olam. Clearly the Ramban understands Kishama Hashem el Anyech, meaning God has responded to your suffering in some way, because her suffering really was that unbearable. By the Targum Onkelos, not translating Kishama Hashem al Onyech as Hashem has heard your suffering, but rather, you daven to Hashem, you're in a difficult time. Maybe the davening wasn't even about what you experienced in the house of Sarah. Maybe the davening was just about, you're here in the desert, you're all alone, what's going to happen with me? Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu has responded to your tefillos. It downplays the impact of whatever she experienced in the house of Sarah, and certainly one suspects that the Targum Onkelos would not sign on to the last line in the Ramban, when the Ramban writes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu granted Yishmael to Hagar le'anos zera Avram v'sara b'chol minei ho'inui, so that Yishmael should torture the descendants of Avram and Sarah to make up for the way that Avram and Sarah tortured Hagar, right? You definitely get the impression that the Targum Onkelos is staying very far away from that statement of the Ramban. I think they say b'shem Rav Moshe Zatzal that the Ramban couldn't have written that. I think they say that, if I'm not mistaken. Yehei Mashi Yehei, you know, it certainly sounds like the Targum Onkelos is going in a very, very different direction than this Ramban. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hears the tefillos of Sarah. It's not that her experiences are somehow so powerful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to, certainly is not going to respond in kind because of what happened to her. Right, so I think that, why does he interpret Shama as Kabil? Right, so I think that's just consistent with the Onkelos in general, where he downplays any humanistic reference to the Ribbono Shel Olam. God can't hear. God can perhaps accept tefillos. God does accept tefillos. But, you know, to say that God hears attributes human characteristics to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to an extent to which we're not comfortable. Certainly the Onkelos is not comfortable extending it to that extent. Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more about Hagar and Yishmael, that whole parasha, where there are a number of Targumim that are interesting and require some thought and reflection. So Be'ez Hashem, we'll have that for tomorrow.